The Bite Me podcast is brought to you this week and every week by Fishing Tackle Unlimited. We shop there. They have everything you need for fishing in every way possible. Inshore, offshore, gear, all of it. Fishing Tackle Unlimited or fishingtackleunlimited.com.
Born in Waco, Texas, Balcones Distilling is where a centuries-old tradition meets the intentional and innovative craft of whiskey making. Since opening in 2008, they've been committed to creating unique and expressive whiskeys that can only be made in Texas. Their products go beyond your standard sipping whiskey, using two yeasts and a longer fermentation in densely packed oak barrels, all intentionally and methodically done to extract more nuanced flavors. It's the Balcones way, backed by a team who's committed to creating expansive, expressive whiskey with its original stamp every day. Experience the bold, unforgettable taste of Balcones. Discover the exciting flavors of its award-winning lineup of American single malts or the classic Baby Blue straight corn whiskey. Or get your hands on one of its special release bottles released seasonally. Visit BalconesDistilling.com to check out their entire whiskey lineup. Balcones Whiskey, distilled to appreciate. Distilled and bottled by Balcones Distilling, Waco, Texas. Please drink responsibly.
If the pre-show is any indication, this is going to be a spirited Bite Me podcast, and it's going to be a lot of information, maybe some help catching more fish, and a lot of great topics to discuss. I'm John Lopez. Captain Scott Null joins us, as always. Captain Caleb McCumber joins us, as always. Got to play hurt sometimes, Caleb. You got to play hurt. You got to do it for the team. Take one for the team here. Caleb is a little bit... not under the weather, a little bit hoarse from yelling for those Astros. And, of course, we need to start with how about those Astros, boys? I mean, that was something special. I know you're both going to want to say something about that and your experiences. I got to go to Game 6, had a blast. I know Caleb, I got to go to Game 6, and he looked like he had a blast. And Scott was sending us middle finger emojis the whole night long. But that's a different story. We'll get to all that. But don't forget, this is the Bite Me podcast, as you heard at the very beginning, presented as always by Fishing Tackle Unlimited. They have that Inshore Expo December 10th. We'll get back to that, but I do want to kind of plant the seed to get out there. It's going to be a great, great event, and it's not too far away from us. We're going to talk oysters big time. That's what we're going to lead off with. And we'll get to a bunch of other stuff, including some very unfair personal attacks on me on the Bite Me group page. How storms affect shallow water fishing, sand trout. We're going to talk a little sand trout. Seems like some people are wondering if they're either more abundant, if they're more abundant because they're more resilient, or what the situation is there. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Spotify and Google Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, join the Bite Me group page. All right. First things first, the good news is we are all big time Astros fans, and man, what a night, Saturday night. Caleb, I'm going to start with you so people can kind of get used to what they're going to be hearing for by the next hour. And it is this, your thoughts on the Houston Astros. You had some really good seats. It looked like right there on the first base line.
Yeah, I can barely talk. My voice is still injured from Saturday.
That's a long
time. We were sitting right around the corner from each other. I bet there wasn't 40 yards between us.
I could probably see you when Kyle Tucker made that last out. I was on the fifth row of right field.
If you watch the replay, right in front of Tucker, there's a guy in a blue and gray hat and a black Altuve jersey jumping up and down and raising all kinds of hell, and that was me.
That was you yelling and losing your voice.
He spit on me a little bit whenever he was cheering in celebration.
Oh, you know, well, that's...
when you're sitting in the front row or the fifth row, it's pretty exciting, isn't it, John?
It was great being at that game, Caleb. I mean, I can't imagine, missing it, be honest. It was fantastic. We were on the fifth row, and Framber Valdez, the starting pitcher, for those who didn't follow the World Series, was like starting the long toss warm up, like literally 10 feet away from us. And my wife was having a blast, watching the game, and you could, the home run was two sections to our right, the Schwarber home run. The Yordan home run was pretty much brought down the building. So we had a blast. Congratulations to the Astros. I got to go to the parade as well. Good for the Astros. What else you got, Caleb?
We've all heard of all about the game. There's one thing that I have not heard brought up yet that I've just been waiting on.
Yeah.
Whenever Alvarado intentionally hit Yordan in game 3, mm-hmm. so that Yordan couldn't smash one on him. And then the next time they saw each other was game six, and Yordan sent it into orbit. That had to feel good on Yordan's part.
Oh, big time, big time. So that's our World Series experience. Scott, did you watch the World Series?
Nah. Nah. I was just sitting there twiddling my thumbs.
He was sending us middle finger emojis. But
he watched it. Biggest, he just watched it 20 seconds after we did.
The biggest damn Astros fan of the three. Been following him longer
how
than either
know
one of you.
That?
I
know.
If you're such
know
a big
that.
Fan, if you're such a big fan, how come you didn't go, fan?
You were in San Antonio because I have a friend that invited me to sit on the front row and paid for my tickets. That's why.
The first game I went
friends.
To, the first
John
Astros
said,
game I
John
went
said
to,
you have one friend. That yeah. one friend paid off, didn't it, buddy?
I've been an Astros fan my whole life. First game I went to was in 1970. Larry Durker was not managing. He was pitching against the Montreal Expos. Yes, kids, there used to be a team called the Montreal Expos. Yeah, I've been an Astros fan my whole life. I feel offended by Scott, but I'm actually glad because I got to go and he didn't. All right, boys, let's talk fishing.
Huh? I was sitting out on a ranch looking at a whole bunch of big deer standing right behind me while the Astros game was on. So that
I've only been a fan since 17 and I still got to go, John.
That's even worse. Oh, my gosh. But let's get back to what this podcast is all about. And it is Bite Me. It is a fishing podcast. And wow. I mean, we've got some stuff going on here. If our group page is any indication, where do we start? Scott, let me start with you. There's some oyster news that I believe you're privy to coming down the pike, but before we get to that, there are all kinds of social images and videos of just oyster boats all over East Matagorda Bay. I'll get to that with you in a minute, Caleb, but also Galveston Bay. What's going on here? We know that most of our listeners, in fact, probably most all our listeners, really support the oystering regulations to keep the oyster reefs healthy and filtering water and keeping the bays healthy and the fishery healthy so we can all catch more fish. Not everybody, but the vast majority certainly of our listeners. What's going on here? Because they shut down certain areas in the lower coast, Scott. Next thing I know, I see 40, 50 or more boats in East Matagorda Bay, which we'll get to Caleb about that in a minute. And then, you know, where you have been for a long time, or at least know very well for years, Galveston Bay, all of a sudden I see 50, 60 or more boats there. What's going on here?
Welcome to our world. That's what we were dealing with down here for the last few years. Mm-hmm. They were all concentrated right there around, you know, Copano and San Antonio Bay and all that. All that's got closed down now. And it would have been closed anyway. You know, everybody's got this idea that, okay, well, they close that and CCA's involved in it and all this other BS. That Parks and Wildlife and the oyster industry, they agreed upon these regulations that if the sampling size didn't meet a certain criteria, those reefs would be closed, those areas. According to the sampling sizes, the only one that would have been opened this year is Galveston Bay. Okay. I guess the second closest to being open would have been East Matagorda. And so when everything else was closed, they made a decision to go ahead and open East Matagorda as well, just to try to spread out some of the pressure.
Right.
So all those oyster boats that have been working over here are now working over there. That's basically what it's come down to. These areas would have been closed no matter what, whether that legislation got passed or not, the new rulings about closing Carlos and Mesquite and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been closed anyway because there's not enough legal-sized oysters. What happens is Parks and Wildlife goes out, they do samplings, and if a certain percentage, I forgot what the percentage is now, are undersized, I think it's 30%, mm-hmm. Are undersized, then that area is closed until such time that the oysters have a chance to grow big enough.
So why haven't we seen this before then in recent years? You know, and Caleb, I know you have to.
We have seen
but like as much as it's been since.
Yes, that's what's been on down in the south end.
No. I mean, like in Galveston and East Matagorda. Yeah,
those places were closed. Those areas.
No, I know they've been in Matagorda. I've seen them myself. I'm just saying, it just seems like there's an overabundance of them now. Maybe I'm
there's
just
more than there used
that.
To be. Yes.
Well, okay. So why is that?
There was more areas closed. The upper coast was closed. There was a lot more areas up there closed. So they were all concentrating down here. Well, they wiped it out down here. So now this area is going to be closed. And now they move back up there. I mean, it's a chess game. You know, they just keep moving around. 3 or 4 years ago, they were all around the causeway there at Port Lavaca. I mean, hundreds of boats every day. And I haven't seen one there in 4 or 5 years. I'm assuming that area got closed because they wiped it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest problem here is every time, I don't know if it's mismanagement on Parks and Wildlife's part or what the deal is, but there's got to be some other way to go about this, because sending them all to one place and they wipe that area out. So now what's next? And then they do the next one. Let's wipe that one out. And then what's next after that? Before long, we're not gonna have anything left.
Right. Right. Caleb, what are you seeing, man?
Let me clear my throat for this. It looks like Texas Park and Wildlife stepped on their proverbial ballpark Frank in the Astros theme here.
Yeah.
You got to be somewhat sensitive to the matter, because there are a bunch of guys in these boats that are feeding their families by being commercial oysters, shrimpers, or something. But whenever you're going to send the entire fleet, Galveston, I've fished a lot of Galveston. I've fished a lot of the reefs over there. I know they're big, but I'm not educated enough in those reefs to argue one way or the other. The reefs that they're on in Matagorda, I've walked them many a time. They're not very big. They're a little bit bigger than the size of this stinking RV camper I'm sitting in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I counted 40 boats on the water. Quebec counted 50 from the air. These aren't scattered across East Matagorda Bay. They're all in one corner. On top of all of that, it's my understanding that there's a 300-foot rule that they have to be off of the shorelines. They are dredging reefs that you would step off of the grass on the shoreline and walk out on. They're barrier reefs. They're what keeps coves together. A compound on top of that, I was about to call the game wardens on them until I saw the game wardens in there watching them do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, there has to be some kind of give and take here. But whenever you're sending these guys to 100 square yards and the guys over in Galveston, and these are the two spots y'all have, you know, then it's a problem. I know what and me being me, instead of just making a post on Facebook and arguing about it, being as how TPWD has already kindly asked me to not call them again in kinder words, I started talking to commercial oyster guys and you know, it looks like they've cut them back to some regard, but the situation is just getting worse and worse. It's just like the trout populations. If you see it steadily declining, at what point is it going to level out and not get worse because you're special?
Yeah. Scott, I know you have some thoughts on that, because it's definitely, I'm wondering are we just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic here? By moving people from one place to another?
Yeah. Florida, around Apalachicola, that was one of the number one oyster areas in the country. Had been for decades and decades. They have completely closed down Apalachicola till starting 2 years ago through 2025. They just said, nope, we're done.
Yeah.
No more. I'm getting to the feeling that may be what comes to pass here. I don't know. There's been some proposals that seem reasonable to me, that doing leases and setting aside certain reefs like Carlos and Mesquite and all those reefs there, set aside some of the natural reefs as what they call legacy reefs, off limits, you know, let those grow. That would be your spawn. That would be your spawning base for producing other reefs.
Mm-hmm.
Having leases for the oyster men, and they can set up those leases and they can seed them just like a farmer, and then as those crops come ready, then they can dredge them. There's also a chance for conservation organizations like Flatsworthy, CCA, any other organizations that want to, could also have a lease and create reefs within their lease that do not get oystered. That seems like a really good solution to me.
Yeah.
We're protecting the base reefs that are there naturally. I mean, those reefs, they came up there naturally for a reason. I mean, they wouldn't have grown there if that wasn't a great spot for them to grow. Yeah, it's the way they've been. We talked about it just recently. Some of the reefs in Galveston were, you know, historically incredibly large. I mean, just huge. Going from Eagle Point over to Smith Point on low tide, they could take a wagon across there, horse and wagon, all the way across what is now wide open, you know, Galveston Bay. I'm sure the ship channel has a huge amount of, you know, problems with that. Yeah, that caused a lot of the degradation of all the oysters out there, of course, because it ripped right through the middle of them. But there's others like in West Bay and West Galveston Bay, Karankawa Reef. When I was younger, Karankawa was stuck up out of the water. You know, on a moderate to low tide, you could see Karankawa Reef all the way across. I was on there, it was 3 or 4 feet deep. So all the top's been taken off of these reefs. And that's what slows erosion and slows all that down. I don't think we could ever rebuild them back to what they were. You know, I don't think that would take, you know, 100 years or more, but we can save what we got.
Those reefs are getting smaller, Scott, because they're not being oystered. You have to oyster a reef and dredge the top of it to make it more healthy.
Yeah, that's what keep hearing.
So what you're referring to.
Well, go ahead. Yeah, because where you're about to go is about to get deep. And I have a thought on my head for the folks that are listening to all of this and seeing all of this and then reading the opinions online. These are reefs that I've fished for since the early 2000s, right? And you could barely throw a quarter-ounce jig head on them back then without losing your lure. You weren't going to get it back. They were big, solid, good reefs. Now the same reefs, whenever you hang up to a shell, you reel it in, and it's about the size of a softball, and you take your lure off and throw it back out.
Yep.
It's dusted remnants of what it used to be. They're not out there with some special machine collecting live oysters. They have great big, you know, hose to describe what it is that they drag on bottom and just rip everything the heck off the bottom.
Yeah.
The argument of they're out there being farmed or whatever is crap. They're getting ripped out of the ground.
Which
is helping them grow. I'll segue right back into where you're going. It helps them grow, John.
Basically, raking everything off the floor bottom, the bay bottom, is helping them grow. What you're referring to has been posted on our page and others, and we obviously, you know, we encourage discussion on our group page as long as it's, you know, pretty straightforward and not too mean, so to speak, for lack of a better word. So you can disagree with that. I disagree with that. You do, obviously, and I'm sure Scott does as well. But what we're getting at here is, man, we want to catch fish. We want the fishery to be healthy. We want our grandkids to catch fish. And so, Scott, I'm interested in your thoughts here, Caleb, because you're like me, and I'm sure Scott as well. I'm very sensitive to the guys working for a living. I mean, you know, shrimpers and obviously oystering and all that. So I'm very sensitive to that. I know what you know, it's a tough life and you have to make a good living. You have to work and be able to do it. But to the point of degrading the entire bay bottom and limiting all other aspects of the outdoors, like you can get your oysters, but then the shrimp population, the fish population, the erosion, it affects high water and high tides and hurricane season and how you're, you know, the barriers for communities, whether it's Sargent or Port O'Connor or Port Lavaca or wherever. To what, at what expense do you, you know, kind of let the oystering continue to oyster, you know, and what is the answer?
Well, and I'm just as sensitive to it as the next guy. And the oyster guy that I was talking to, he said it'd be just like telling all the guides you can only guide in these three areas. You know what I am told every year, John. Have to guide in Texas. If you want to guide somewhere else, you got to do this all over again, right? I'm pretty sure that all these boats aren't Texan boats. You know, maybe that's the answer. If you want to destroy your state and then come to ours, this is the problem. Take care of your state. Take care, because you want people to be able to make a living. You do, right?
but at what expense?
Right, exactly. That was one of my comments on the post is, and I believe it in all aspects, whether it's, you know, wildlife, whether it's politics, whether it's religion, whether it's professional sports, humanity is going to destroy it in some aspect or fashion. That's just how it is. That's how humanity works, myself included, right?
Yeah.
But there has to be some sort of a choke point in there to make it where we destroy it slower. And the 50 boats on a tiny reef, and I think Alan said he counted 90 over there in Galveston, wherever he was at. I don't know if this to be true. Maybe Scott knows this to be true, because I deal with a bunch of sour guides all the time over here. Most of them are older than me. Most of them are grumpier than me, if you can imagine, right? And one of the things that they said, again, Scott could correct me here. They said something about a lot of these boats are Croatian boats. They're not even American boats. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Whether they're just employing Croatians, I don't know. But they sure seemed stinking positive about it. Now, I do know that Louisiana boats and Mississippi boats and Alabama boats come to Palacios and shrimp the heck out of the waters. But I'm not overly educated on the whole oyster thing.
What are your thoughts, Scott, on all that? And outside of what you did mention, the leases, at what cost? I mean, what are some options here? Is oystering at this point for some of these older guys all that they can do? I mean, are there other options, or the seasons too long? What's bouncing around in your head?
I keep hearing, well, we can't just take, we got to let them do something. We got to let them have the oysters. Well, and then CCA's fault, and I don't know
how CCA got
CCA keeps getting dragged into this. It's between Parks and Wildlife and the oyster farm folks or the oyster industry. But let's go way back in history. I was fishing in a time when there were gill nets, and there was commercial fishermen, and you could walk into a restaurant and buy speckled trout.
Yeah,
you could walk into any fish market and buy speckled trout or redfish. No problem at all. Except that there was a serious depletion going on. I mean, we were damn near out of redfish. Mm-hmm. So they came along and fixed that by doing away with gill nets. Are we getting to the same point on oysters, that we were with redfish? Mm-hmm. Is it, come to a point where, sorry, folks, we just don't have enough left. There's not enough out there. If you keep taking everything and not replanting, sooner or later, you don't have a corn crop, man.
Right.
It's just frustrating that to watch it be raped like that. And the same thing with the, back in the day with the gill nets and the purse seines. The purse seines were the worst. Most of the guys these days have no idea what I'm talking about on purse seines. They would fly spotter planes out over the Gulf of Mexico. They would have two big ships there. And they had
passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance, from superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Purse seines. One end of the ship, just like a big seine when you walk it, walk a tank, and one person on either end of a seine. They would have a ship on either end of the seine. They would fly around in the Gulf of Mexico, spot entire schools of bull reds, and send those ships over to them. and net entire schools of breeder bull reds. That's where we got into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking all of them. Then we didn't have anything left to replenish it. So what we're doing now is taking all of these oysters and not having enough to replenish what the demand for them is. There was a demand for those redfish. That black and redfish craze is what took off and caused all that. So
yeah,
at some point we just got to say enough's enough. And I mean, I'm going to get hate mail for that. Whatever. But I'm more about the conservation of our coast than I am about comfort. And we can eat something besides an oyster.
Well, and I think we're going to eat oysters. You know, the biggest markets, and part of it is because the depletion here on the Gulf Coast right now are in Maine and Maryland and Washington State. So they clearly have done something to manage their oyster reefs, you know, and be able to still produce. Maybe, you know, you can spend 50 cents more, you know.
Those Maryland blues are about $48 a dozen.
Okay.
Because I bought them, but, you know.
But there are Maryland, there's Maine, there's all kinds of other things.
Aquaculture oysters can happen more than just there if the issue is forced, right?
Right.
But I think what one of the comments this is me riding around in a boat all day for the last couple of days, but mm-hmm. one of the comments was, well, it's not that big a deal because they're not going to be there very long, you know, talking about the boats. And my thought was, well, a house fire doesn't last very long either, but the result's the same.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. And I think, look, there's so many other things that to add to this. We do want to get to helping and some other topics here. But some walkaways here, if you can, because I know this has been a really good conversation from you guys that is going to get a lot of our listeners, the Bite Me listeners on the Facebook page and otherwise going. Where, Scott, I'll start with you. Where do we, is this the right call, or is this just the best call for right now that Texas Parks and Wildlife has done, where it just seems to be so many? I do like Caleb's idea about maybe limiting Texas oysters, Texas boats. But what are your part? I mean, where do we go from here to maybe make that happen?
I think Parks and Wildlife, I'm sorry, they're backed into a corner here, mm-hmm. because regulations are set up in such a way to protect the reefs. If your sampling says the reef's not ready to be harvested and an area is not ready to be harvested, you can't just open it all up and let them spread out like everybody wants them to do. Cause then they wreck hell on what's left.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unfortunate that there's only a handful of reefs that are ready to be harvested. I think that there should, well, they already have. One of the parts of the legislation that went through is an oyster buyback program. Same thing they did on shrimpers. Back in the day, man, the shrimp boats were everywhere, just like these oyster boats. They were mm-hmm. all over the bay, everywhere. And you... talk about messing up the water quality. They just dragged the bottom with their nets. And there was a study done. I forgot the exact number, but every square foot of Galveston Bay was being dredged by shrimpers on average. I want to say it was like 10 times a year for every square foot.
Jeez.
All the benthic life on the bottom, all the worms, all the crabs, all that stuff was getting disturbed that many times over and over and over again. Your base of your bay needs to be settled, and it needs to grow, and it needs to have, you know, that's where all your life comes from. And by doing that over and over and over again, they weren't ever letting it grow. And so they started a shrimper buyback program. We all know about that. I mean, it's been a huge deal. Now you seldom even see a shrimper out on the bay. I mean, there's bait shrimpers, and that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. All the shrimping goes on off the beachfront and offshore, and then catch bigger shrimp that way. So yes, something can be done to limit the number. And now they're doing the oyster permit buyback. I don't think it's really taken off yet because it's too lucrative right now to jump in there and catch these oysters. I mean, the sack price has gone through the roof, from what I understand. And as long as there's money in it, you're not going to be able to get them to sell out. But the thing with shrimpers was it was getting to a point where there was fewer and fewer shrimp, and the amount of diesel that they were burning to catch those shrimp wasn't going up enough to keep up with it. It just got to a point where it wasn't economically viable for a shrimper. So a lot of the old time shrimpers started selling their licenses off. CCA bought a bunch of them. Parks and Wildlife had a fund to buy them back. There was another group that came along. I forgot their name. It was CEA, I think, was the initials. Anyway, they came along and they were buying back a bunch of them. That was their sole purpose. Mm-hmm. And so that eliminated a lot of the shrimpers. They got to kind of, they had a retirement then. You know, they sold their shrimping license back at a fairly lucrative amount and sold the shrimp boats and moved on. I see that eventually happening with these oyster boats, and that's what's going to cause the decline in oyster boats will help the reefs in the long run. It'll also make the few remaining oyster guys happy because there's not as much competition, and it'll allow the oysters to grow, then they can spread back out like they used to.
Caleb, one thing you noted when we were texting offline, I think could be a part of this. I want to get your kind of parting thoughts on this topic before we move on, but also ask you, you were kind of hinting, not so much hinting as, but it's pretty much saying enforcement of these regulations has to be more stringent on the oystering as well. That's clearly a way to discourage them. You say you told us you saw some oystering clearly in some areas that they probably shouldn't have been in.
Yeah, hinting has never been my strong suit, has it gone?
Exactly.
And then that's why I texted, Scott, is, hey, isn't there an amount of distance they have to be off the shoreline? Because I thought it was going to be, 100 yards, 150 yards, which I think 300 feet comes out to
100 yards.
Yeah, there you go. And and these guys are...
Matt's not his strong suit either.
I've been fishing for trout for 3 days. I've gotten dumber.
Hey.
But these guys are up inside coves. They're going to main bays, but then there's boats that are dredging in coves that are right off of the bank. And I asked Scott that question because I was going to call the game wardens on them. A couple of years ago, I called the game wardens on them because they were all the holes, the leftover shells are supposed to take back to the reef. They're kicking them off of their boats in front of the condo that I was living in. Right. I called the game warden. Didn't care. Game warden's working out there. Didn't care.
Were the game wardens, or was it just Parks and Wildlife boats? Because they do monitor. Well, there's some that are just biologists that do the monitoring.
No, maybe.
This was the V-hole Accelerate with and they were boarding oyster boats and checking licenses and stuff, it looked like.
Okay. Mm-hmm. May have been overwhelmed.
it's pretty plain. Yeah, they were probably busy. But, it's the same game wardens that have checked me for a life check at 5,000 times and never asked to check a fish in Matagorda either. I would love to see if I'm get, somebody asked me if I'm doing illegal crap. Besides, is your fire extinguisher charged? Let's protect the resource. Let's don't make it a money grab. Let's protect the resource if we're going to be out here.
A peanut butter M&M's production.
In a world where Super Bowl winners get the world's admiration and a fancy ring, but the runners-up get nothing, one retired cop returns...
That's one retired quarterback. Read the script.
Oh, sorry. One retired quarterback returns to claim what's his.
That's claim a ring with diamonds made from M&M's peanut butter. But you're on a roll.
The Ring of Comfort, coming soon to a Super Bowl near you.
All right, that's good. Let's get to some fishing topics here. And as the resource is still pretty dang good to us, maybe our listeners can have their questions answered and catch some more fish. One point of order, I was texting with my guy Tim Stamps over at Wade Wright, Wade Wright at coastalfishinggear.com. He said a couple of our listeners, he appreciates it very much, have been using the Bite Me 20 code, BITEME20, the Bite Me 20 code, and trying to get that for other items. What we have to remind you of, that's very, very important. It's not just particular individual items. It's the deal is an incredible deal. Basically, if you use the Bite Me 20 code at coastalfishinggear.com, the 9 products that are part of the Bite Me combo, they retail individually for $190. And then the combo is priced at $149.99. With the Bite Me 20 code, you get 20% off. So you can get that $190 value, 9 items. It's the belt, it's the sling, it's all you guys know it and love it. You can get it all for just $119.99. So as much as he appreciates all that, and would love to help, the Bite Me 20 is for the Bite Me combo. It's well worth your trouble to go on there and get it done that way. All right, so as we're talking here, let's go through these pretty quickly here. I think there's some good topics that a lot of our listeners that are catching fish and wanting to catch more have sent us. The first one is about storms. And Scott, I'm going to start with you because we've all talked about how the storms and sometimes the fishing is better depending on the front and the pressure, et cetera, et cetera. But this question, Scott, was about how storms affect shallow water fish. Like they don't necessarily affect fish. In fact, they can help when you get some of these storms and fronts coming in. You know, the fish that are on the deeper water of the bays and near shore. But like if you're in some of these back lakes and you're wanting to catch, you know, you catch a storm and you're trying to go out fishing, does it affect the fish in the back lakes any more?
Yes. A lightning storm will affect redfish up shallow. I'm sure it affects trout too, but I've seen it firsthand. Yeah, we're in fact, it was a trip Dean and I were out there and we had just redfish tailing all over the place. One of the magical mornings, you know, just really cool out there on Brown Root Flats. A little pop-up storm came over, you know, it was coming in off the Gulf and we scurried back to the truck, just set our kayaks up there on the bank, sat in the truck and BS for a little bit. The storm passed. We went back out there with not a fish around. I mean, it was dead. It was like a desert out there. But it had been a really popping lightning storm. And I guess that lightning just scared the crap out of them and sent them off into the deeper water. So yeah, I mean, a storm like that does affect it. I've also seen it where, you know, a storm in the vicinity, just turns them on. You know, they just get fired
up. Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
You know, a hot summer day and you get a good rain shower. I think it increases the oxygen in the water quite a bit. It peps them up and it cools things down a little bit. And I've seen them go off with that. But on the negative side, yeah, definitely. A major lightning storm sends them flying. Well, you shouldn't even be out there. It's a major lightning storm. Yeah, I ain't sticking around.
Me and Scott have had that conversation while we were out there.
Yeah. What's that? About the shallow water and storms?
No, about the lightning hitting beside us. And not only did it shut down the bite, but we probably shouldn't be out there.
Oh yeah, I have a standard line whenever one of those pop-up storms comes, and it's a pretty good one. And sometimes it's been more than a pop-up storm. You know, my kids or whomever I'm with will ask me, "Are we all right? Is that all right with all that rain and lightning?" I said, "We're fine as long as we're not in a boat," and we're inevitably in a boat when that happens. Okay, well let's get to the next one for our listeners here. Casting for distance effectively. Caleb, I'll start with you on this one. The question was about best long distance casting combinations or tips or whatever for land-based fishermen, whether it's surf or whatever. But I think we can expand that to something that we talked about a year ago, Scott and I anyway, on casting distance. And I think you were in on that one as well. Like sometimes it's not as important. Casting distance, sometimes it's not important at all, but sometimes you do have to have that rig that you do need to cast effectively for distance. What would you tell our listener there? And also if you can expand it to, and maybe Scott would be better equipped to do this, but expand it to surf fishing and casting.
Well, I think we've accidentally stumbled in over our heads on this one, because I do believe that he may be asking about those 12-foot poles and that howdy doody lasso whip they do to shoot.
I've seen those. I've done that back in the day, long time ago. I hope not. I hope that's not what he's talking about.
Best I can tell you, if you're fishing from the bank and want to be able to send it, is that you're probably gonna be best with a bait caster. And believe it or not, if you have your tension a little bit tighter than you think it should be, but your brakes are balanced out, you can cast further that way. And a longer rod will get you out there, but that's you know, I don't have a whole heck of a lot
of surf fishing. If you're talking about surf fishing with the long rods, yeah. I mean, that's a whole different animal. Those guys have those rocket launcher type things with the air pressure.
Have a cast they do that's wild. And I have no idea how they do it, but they'll whip that thing in a big old circle and a figure eight and kick their left foot up a little bit and turn their cap and send it 100 yards out there. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, we're the wrong people for that. But in terms of just casting distance, you know what you're talking about. Then we'll get to Scott. How do you set it up? Because I thought your point right there was very good. I've always, for years, I thought, well, I'm gonna keep it real loose and use my thumb and be able to use it. You do have to kind of batten it down a little bit, or else you're just gonna get, you know, cobweb after cobweb.
Well, I mean, my stuff is very loose the way that I cast with it, but I cast on average 20 yards. It's loose for different reasons. Whenever you really want to be able to reach back and send it as far as you can, it's better to have your reel balance out to where it's letting the line off, but the overrun isn't as likely to happen. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that's the knob on the right, the tension knob, having a little bit of tension, but your brakes allow it to spin a little bit more. And there's a perfect little balance in there where that spool will spin really well, but the tension keeps it from overrunning. And you have to do it every time you change the weight of your lure. You're going to have to do it over again.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Scott?
I'm reading the question, and it says land-based surf fisherman. So yeah. I'm assuming he's talking about long rods.
I get that, and I was too, but I thought it would be good to expand it to others as well.
For the regular guys, you know, throwing lures for trout and want to reach out there, you know, as the sun comes up and the trout are farther out, 7.5 foot rod, it's not a bad idea. Back in the day when we were doing it, hell, I threw one that was an 8 foot 3 inch rod. That's, you know, longer rod, you got more leverage. And that's the surf guys use 10 and 12 footers. I mean, I did that a long time ago too. I was a pure rat way back, and the old pin squitter, and have the pin squitter on a 10 foot rod and stand on that T head out there and just hum it, throw it as far out as we could. Little did we know, most of the fish were probably up
right under you, right under you.
But we had to get it out there, man. That's the only way you catch any fish. Throw it far. Looking back on it, we were really probably screwing up by throwing it that far. There's a whole culture out there of the land-based surf guys that, like Caleb said, they've got these special casts, special windups and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But go with a 7.5 foot rod, and Caleb's saying, you know, spinning or bait caster, a spinning rod can throw a long ways. I mean, it not get a backlash, not have to worry about it. The line comes off real free. I know a lot of the East Coast and big striper fishermen, that's what they do. They're using long rods and spinners, and they have to reach way out there to get on those albies and the stripers a lot of times. So
yeah,
I think that's probably the way to go if you really wanted to get out there, you know, not get into the 10 and 12 foot, you know, big surf rods.
Mm-hmm.
Would be to go with a longer rod and a spinning reel.
See, I can cast a spinning reel probably I'd say without exaggerating much about 100 yards. But then the lure lands 30 feet in front of me because it went 100 yards straight up.
That's a you problem, not a real problem.
That's oh, man. the thing about the spinning reels and rods when you're trying to tell someone, I always tell them, like, try 45 degrees, like right there. And 45 degrees, it tends to be like straight up or parallel to the water. I'm like, did you ever go to algebra? Did you ever go to anything geometry? 45 degrees right there, let it go. And I get it, but what do I know? That reminded me, I meant to ask you guys early, did you see these personal attacks on me on our Facebook group page?
I am. These unfair.
Because they see them. Hell, we joined in.
These totally
every person
unfair
on my boat this week has asked about how those kids are doing now.
My favorite one was somebody left a comment, now we know that the secret ingredient to John's OG sauce, it's children's tears.
Going back to oysters, you remind me of that walrus on Alice in Wonderland that was just abusing all the kids. And
Oh my gosh, I was getting so many laughs out of that, but it did hurt a little bit inside. It did. By the way, I mean, talk to JT at the
ahead. Thing of it is, John, people have to understand that, you know, of course, yeah, those kids had something that was that fueled their hopes and their dreams and everything, but at the end of the day, you know, you had to figure out how to make a profit, and you did, because you have to feed your family.
This has nothing to do with anything. Boy, that was fun.
Buy that new house.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. 2024 Santa Fe, available early 2024.
Yeah, yeah. So help.
Yeah, we're sitting here looking at house. all of his new nice stuff on his wall behind him.
John, is that new clothes you got on? Is that new? Got new Columbia? Yeah.
Hey, what did he just say? He's trying to get his new laptop set up. I heard that.
I did get a new laptop. Is that from the children's tears as well?
Yep.
Oh, that was fun. But anyway, back to serious business. Oh, before that, I do want to mention also, we're getting there's some new retailers out there for Knock and Tail. I've been talking with Mike Acrylic out there. He posted really cool stuff on the website as well. He actually went down Bite Me 30. So he went another 10% for our listeners, which is awesome. I believe through the holidays for the Knock and Tail lures. So usually Bite Me 20, but he's in a given mood for the holidays. If you haven't tried them before, they've been really, really good. He was posting some pictures of some guys that were trying them for the first time, catching a mess of fish. I need to get me some more, but it's pretty well stocked so far. I just need a couple of colors. He has seven colors of the 5-inch, seven colors of 3 1/4 inch KTL jig heads, and try the Bite Me 30 discount code at mycoastoutdoors.com, and he'll definitely take care of you. So here's another one that I think is pretty interesting before we get to what would Scott do and what would Caleb do. So I actually looked this up right before we came on air and started recording. So I got a question about sand trout, and they just seem to be more abundant than ever. Now, before you tell yourself, yeah, they always seem to be more abundant this time of year. It just seems to be, you know, one of those things that they come in waves, so to speak. But I actually looked it up. The sand trout, I forget what story it was, might have been Shannon Tompkins, was talking about how much more resilient they are than even your average trout. They're not like the most resilient fish, but they are more resilient. So the question came up, did the sand trout do better, you know, during the freeze and everything that happened afterwards than trout? And is that why we're seeing more? Or is that just reading too much into it, Scott? And sand trout just seem to come in waves, like I mentioned.
Maybe since there's not as many speckled trout, they don't have as much competition.
Well, that too.
Maybe they're doing better because of that. I don't really know. I'm, you know, not a biologist.
But, yeah.
Yeah. We play one on here from time to time, according to.
Well, we hear things. We talk to people. We know people. Yeah. But I thought that was a good question. Scott, excuse me, Caleb, I mean, you've been, yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Different populations come and go. You know, over time, you'll see fluctuations in things, especially in fish that are somewhat considered a bait fish. You know, I would guess that, you know, trout would eat a whole lot of sand trout. You know, speckled trout would eat a whole hell of a lot of sand trout. So not as many trout around, not as many got eaten. Maybe they're doing better.
Caleb, you've been out trout fishing. You just mentioned that a little while ago. Have you seen more sand trout, heard more sand trout being caught? More than usual, because as I mentioned, it almost seems like every year, like, man, I can't get out of the sand trout. They just come in that wave, as I mentioned, or what do you think?
Yeah, I've been messing with sand trout, decades and decades. Yeah. Sand trout are just built different, man. I firmly believe there's a heck of a lot more of them. You know, the guys say they like the way they fight. They're a stronger fish than a trout is. They just don't get as big as a speckled trout does.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to early years fishing lights in the river with my buddies when we were young. You catch 10,000 sand trout to one speckled trout. And I know there's speckled trout there because I'm still catching speckled trout there today.
Yeah.
In the bay, it's whenever you're working birds, it's pretty often to find a bunch of sand trout. I will say since the freeze, I've noticed that our East Matagorda birds probably have a little, especially last season, had more sand trout under them than speckled trout.
Yeah.
This year I'm probably seeing more speckled trout this year than last year, but they're smaller. And mm-hmm. And I was telling y'all that they'd be legal if they hadn't changed the size, but we've been arguing that the part of the reason they changed the size is because they're protecting the largest part of the biomass. And I think that's fine, and that's all great and good and everything. But a sand trout, it could be that they're just more aggressive. If you've got, it's kind of like if there's a school of redfish with five trout in it, there's a lot of the times you're going to catch that redfish over that trout because he's just going to be more aggressive to the bait.
Yeah.
And that might be why you're seeing more catch of sand trout, but it could be balanced. But at the end of the day, I've always seen it's always seemed like the sand trout population was a lot bigger than the speckled trout population.
And I don't know how you feel about this, Caleb, but Scott, I know maybe even not recently, but back in the day, a good 12 to 14 inch sand trout, give me that for dinner. I mean, that's a dang good fish to eat.
Yeah, they're good eating. You know, it's mm-hmm. like when we had big croaker, along the same lines.
Mm-hmm.
They don't
just
freeze.
Don't freeze them.
Yeah, they don't freeze worth it.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's got to be fresh.
Yeah, you got to eat them fresh. Don't go catch 100 of them, put them in the freezer thinking that you've done something. You want to keep just enough for dinner and maybe dinner the next night.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I did find it interesting. Scott, you may know this too, and I may just look ignorant on this because I didn't see this in Shannon's story. But I did see it like when I was looking at, I was like, well, are they? Somebody posted that sand trout and speckled trout aren't even the same species. Is that correct?
I think sand trout are more closely related to croaker.
Really?
Yeah.
They look an awful lot like them. They're just tougher.
Yeah.
And they're more.
Something we used to catch a ton of that I never see anymore is gulf trout. It looked just like speckled trout, but no specks on it. I mean, mm-hmm. we out to the jetties in Galveston when I was a kid, and we catch more of those than we did speckled trout. I mean, there was tons of them. Go out to the short rigs and mm-hmm. catch the hell out of them. I don't know whatever happened to those. I can't recall the last time I even saw one.
They were big too. I mean, they were big enough.
Yeah, they got pretty good.
They were healthy. What's going on right now for you, Scott? I was talking to Caleb about his trout fishing. You've been out. What have you seen out there before we get to what would Scott do and what would Caleb do?
Reds are as good as they've been all year. I mean, I'm seeing more reds up shallow. Yeah, we're getting some lower tides. It's high as hell right now because we got this east wind. But as soon as we get that norther this weekend, blow some water back out, those low tide days have been just killer for me. Mm-hmm. Lots of reds moving up and down the shorelines, lots of little shrimp popping. Little bitty shrimp that were born in May, apparently. They're just popping all over the place. Yeah, they're
if you made a
drive by right there.
If you made a lure that looks like a shrimp for the fall, would you call it a mayfly?
Yes. That's brilliant. Yeah, the answer is yes on that. Absolutely.
No, it's just like rain going down those shorelines. It doesn't matter if it's a mullet or whatever it is. If a fish runs from me on the poling skiff, flounder are kicking out of the dirt and taking off. I mean, it's just like a shower of shrimp. Just going everywhere. It's really, it's pretty cool. I think we've had a little late hatch there.
Hey man, I loved your video too. So give it a shout out to your part-time gig there or your fun hobby, whatever you want to call it, Scott. You posted some really cool videos from the ranch and what's happening on that. If you want to talk about that real quick.
Yeah. Our deer haven't been moving real well and we've been going out and sitting and watching and hoping, as we got customers coming, we know there's deer on the ranch. We know there, but if you go out and shake an oak tree right now, it just rains acorns. So I think that the deer just hung up in there.
Yeah.
So the other day I went out and was sitting and our rut's just starting to kick off. And apparently there was a doe in heat on the other side of the fence from us.
Mm-hmm.
And these two bucks came out and I watched them for 2 hours those the two
they were trying to get over the fence.
They just walked up and down the fence and just like staring, just like sick, man. They weren't eating. I mean, they weren't feeding at all. You know, there was plenty of food around. They never went,
like never went to the close. Food at all.
They were just standing next to each other and they just wandered up and down the fence. I got some really cool video. One of them is probably a 200 class deer, 200, 210 class deer. And
I saw that one, I think.
Yeah. The non-typical, we've got him pinned at about 200 to 210. I believe I have that deer spoken for now after that video went out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my customers called and said, I really would like to have that deer on my wall. the other one, I think he's probably a little young, but really, I mean, sit out there on a normal day and you'll see 6 or 8 bucks, you know, good bucks. And that day, that's the 2 bucks I saw. That was it, man.
Yeah.
It was nothing. No does, no nothing. The ranch owner's son was down over the weekend and he flew a drone around just, you know, checking the place, looking at the ponds and stuff, see how full they were. And he said, man, they flew the drone all over the place, never saw a deer. Not a single deer.
They're just in that thick stuff, man.
Yeah, they're hanging out. Hell, they don't have to go anywhere. You know, they're laying down in the oak trees eating. You know, just lean over and grab a bite. You know, the acorns are falling on your head.
Yeah. Caleb, how about you? Did you get in? What have you seen before we get into this weekend?
Pretty well the same as Scott. Red fishing was real good for me last week. This week the tides came up and it got windy, and trout fishing's been pretty darn good all week too.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's absolutely good.
Just nobody's told Mother Nature it's November and we're supposed to have a day or two of wind and then 4 or 5 days of calm.
Dude, and the heat, man. What has the water temps been?
76 today, I believe, is where it was at.
Okay, well.
November
could be worse. Could
70s? That's not right.
Yeah, it could be a lot better, but it could be worse. All right. One more thing, Anglers Anonymous. Just for those who I was talking about the OG sauce earlier, I sent and restocked Mike. He was really, really happy. Apparently, people have been scooping it up. So you want to get some OG sauce, and of course, all your fishing gear as well. If you live in that area, Anglers Anonymous is going to be there for you. So what would Scott do? What would Caleb do? Looking at the forecast here, I know you guys have been out on the water, so you have a much better beat on things than I do. Caleb, I'm going to put you on the spot first. People want to go fishing this week. They want to catch fish this weekend. What would you tell them to do? What would you do?
Catch it before Friday. You better catch it, or really catch it by Friday. How about that?
Yeah.
But you know, Pat and them have been waiting. I've been drifting. We've all been catching fish. It's the time of year to do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. It'll let you do about anything. Saturday, I've said there's no shot I'll be at FTU because I'm gonna be busy down here working. I think I might be at FTU on Saturday. It gets pretty darn sporty on Saturday. Sunday's meh. And then Monday, it happens all over again. I think we have another front blasting in on Monday.
Saturday, I see sustained. I don't know about where you are, Scott. Sustained 25 to 28, gusts to 33 to 38. Come on now.
And you left out the rain and the cold, too.
Oh, yeah, the rain, too. Yeah, that, too.
Yeah, that's not good. I'm looking at 28 and 52 degrees at daylight.
Yeah.
And rain. Chances are really, really, really good that I'm not going to be out there. I'm just going to throw that out there right this minute. But that should knock some water out. It looks like it's going to be almost a straight north. So it's going to knock the water down a little bit. Sunday might. I mean, it sells, you know, 15 to 20, 25. It's going to be sporty on Sunday too, but with that water down, the sun out, you can get up there shallow and find some fish, maybe. Again, 52 degrees. Man, it's Monday don't look any better. Monday it swings around to the east.
Yeah.
If you want to go fish right now and you got a real aching to go fish, take Friday.
Or hankering.
Yeah. Take Friday off. Friday morning at 7. You know, 7 miles an hour southeast and 74 degrees. That seemed a whole lot nicer and a whole lot more comfortable than going out there on Saturday and getting beat up and wet.
Brian from Sabine called me earlier today and asked me if I tried out a new prop that he sent me. And I think I snorted when I laughed at him. No, no, I have not.
No, and I was planning on going this weekend, but just tell people that they're having another Astros victory parade and go Thursday, Friday, some one of those days. Just have another. Yeah, you didn't hear about that parade?
Yeah.
Gonna be it's gonna be celebrating. Exactly.
I'll be out there pulling tomorrow in the wind. It'll be interesting. It's straight east tomorrow almost. So we are going to set up on the east side and we're going to go west.
Yeah. I wish I had one spot over here where I could say, you know what, the wind's blowing this way, we're going to pull that way. Everything I have is, it doesn't matter what the wind direction is, it just points in that direction. I don't have a choice. I have everything I have is one way in, one way out.
Yeah. And you got to cross a lot of stuff too. Down there on the way. ScottNullPhotography.com also for some photos. Have you taken any photos of those from the ranch, of those bucks that you were talking about earlier, Scott?
Yeah, I've been taking a few.
Nothing for your website, nothing of your wildlife photography level.
It's been just scouting photos. It's too late in the day when they come out and I don't have good light on them. And so they're not really high quality photos, but they're it's just taking inventory of what deer we have and trying to figure out what we have to hunt.
But you can go to ScottNullPhotography.com to get some of your prints, and they are awesome if people haven't seen them yet, as well as some Bite Me podcast fishing gear, which is really, really cool. Stickers have been popular, and I think we have a bunch of those left. Scott was saying that last week. AllstateRoofs.com if you want to get with Caleb and get that new roof taken care of as well. You guys have been great. This is going to be a much-talked-about episode. We always have a lot of fun. It's always great to have a lot of fun, and we did today as well. But that first good meaty 30-35 minute segment on the Oystering, I know it's going to get some good feedback and some good discussion going. We'll see where it goes. Let's get Shane Bonneau on real soon, Scott. I know you were working on that. I think we're going to get him on pretty soon.
What is it y'all say in radio? We're efforting.
Efforting to get Shane on the show.
Like probably the November 22nd, he's free,
and somewhere in there
we will likely get him on there, and that way we can have somebody who can intelligently talk about all the biological parts of this equation
and some of the questions that we addressed here. What are you efforting, Caleb?
Speaking of intelligent biologicals, we might have to get somebody that's a president of a CCA chapter on here.
wait what did you say?
we'll tell him that he gets 15 minutes, but I bet we don't get rid of him for the hour.
He's gonna be lucky if he gets 3 minutes, because we might have to, like, all right, that's enough bad words.
We need a dump button.
That's enough bad words. I don't want to be editing till 3 a.m.
We'll do I'll have a gong here. And the beep. I hit it, yeah, that means he has to stop.
Yeah. Do the beep. All right, boys, y'all have a great weekend. Doesn't look like there'll be a lot of fishing out there, but maybe get some of your honeydews done. Maybe start early on your Christmas stuff. If you can, get out there Thursday, Friday, or both, and enjoy it. We're going to be right back here next week. Don't forget, get us your questions and topic suggestions. We use them all. Eventually, we'll get to all of them. And you can reach us right there on the Bite Me group page or individually, etc. Fun show, as always, guys. You guys knocked it out of the park, as always. Hope you do catch some fish. And be safe, man. That wind's going to be kicking this weekend, and we'll talk to you next time.